Okay. Before I continue with the sharing of the Heart Sutta, I will do the invocation to the devas. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in the entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine or teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta chakawalesu atra gacchan tu devata saddhammang muni rajasa sunantu sakamokkadang Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho. Vijacarana sampanno sugato lokavido anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manusanam buddho bhagavati. Swakato bhagavata dhammo sanditiko akaliko ehi paseko opanaiko pajatang veditatbo vinohiti. Supatipanno bhagavato savakasango Ujupatipanno bhagavato savakasango Yadidang chattari purisa yogani Atta purisa pugala Esa bhagavato savakasango Ahuneyo pahuneyo Dakeneyo anjali karaniyo Anutarang punyaketang lokasati Sadhu Sadhu, sadhu. Okay. Now turn to page 23, Hasuta. Tammy. I pass you the mic. You help me to read.
A
page 23, yeah?
Good morning. Heart Sutta, the sixth Heart Sutta class, meditation class by Brother Teo Kien Kun at Wu Bin Jin Sia on 18 March 2012. So I start from part one. Part one, Heart Sutta lesson six, introduction three, page 22 to 24 of Master Xuan Hua's commentary, 1.1, the heart of Prajnaparamita Sutta, with verse without a stand, and prose commentary consists of three parts: the sutta text itself, number 2, the Venerable Master Xuan Hua's verse explanation, and number 3, the Master's lectured commentary on the text and verses. This Heart Sutra is an essential summary of the Mahayana Buddhism teaching on true emptiness. The Heart Sutra is nothing less than a summation of the wisdom of the Buddha. It distills perfectly the teaching of non-attachment, which is the doctrine of emptiness. As the Venerable Master Xuan Hua says in his commentary, on the most advanced of masters can expect... Only the most advanced of masters can expect to grasp the full import of the sutra by itself, without the aid of a teacher, because this teaching is the heart in the heart within the heart. Brother Teo also concurs with Master Xuan Hua's statement and also said, Dharma must be delivered from the heart spontaneously and not through any prior planning via memory. Otherwise, it is only knowledge and not wisdom. The important criteria for translating the Heart of Prajnaparamita Sutra as adopted by Master Xuan Hua are the 8 guidelines of the Buddhist Text Translation Society. Number 1. A volunteer must free himself or herself from the motives of personal fame and profit. Number 2. A volunteer must cultivate a respectful and sincere attitude, free from arrogance and conceit. Number 3. A volunteer must refrain from aggrandizing his or her work and denigrating that of others. A volunteer must not establish himself or herself as the standard of correctness and suppress the work of others with his or her fault-finding. A volunteer must take the Buddha's mind as his or her own mind. Number 6. A volunteer must use the wisdom of Dharma selecting vision to determine true principles. 7. A volunteer must request virtuous elders in the 10 directions to certify his or her translations. Number 8. A volunteer must endeavor to propagate the teachings by printing sutras, shastras texts, and vinaya texts when the translations are certified as being correct. When there is a condition to share the translated Dharma, one must share, thus allowing the translation to benefit more living beings. Part 2, Meditation 2.1, Angulimala Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 86. translated from the Pali text by Thanissaro Bhikkhu. Thus have I heard that on one occasion the Blessed One was staying near Savatthi at Jeta's Grove, Anatta Pindika's monastery, and at that time in King Pasanadi's reign, there was a bandit named Angulimala, brutal, bloody-handed, devoted to killing and slaying, showing no mercy to living beings. He turned village into non-village, towns into non-towns, settled countryside into unsettled countryside. Having repeatedly killed human beings, he wore a garland, mala, made of fingers, anguli. Then the Blessed One, early in the morning, having put on his robes and carrying his outer robe and bow, went into Savatthi for alms. Having wandered for alms in Savatthi and returning from his alms round after his meal, he set his lodging in order. Carrying his robes and bow, he went along the road to where Angulimala was staying. Cowherds, shepherds, and farmers saw him going along the road to where Angulimala was staying, and on seeing him, said to him, "Don't go along that road, contemplative, for on that road is Angulimala, brutal, bloody-handed, devoted to killing and slaying, showing no mercy to living beings. He has turned village into non-village, towns into non-towns, settled countryside into unsettled countryside. Having repeatedly killed human beings, he wears a garland made of fingers. Groups of 10, 20, 30, and 40 men have gone along that road, and even they have fallen into Angulimala's hands." When this was said, the Blessed One kept going in silence. A second time, a third time, cowherds, shepherds, and farmers said to the Blessed One, "Don't go along that road, contemplative. Groups of 10, 20, 30, and 40 men have gone along that road, and even they have fallen into Angulimala's hands." When this was said to the Blessed One, the Blessed One kept going in silence. Then Angulimala saw the Blessed One coming from afar, and on seeing him, this thought occurred to him. "Isn't it amazing? Isn't it astounding? Groups of 10, 20, 30, and 40 men have gone along this road, and even they have fallen into my hands. And yet now this contemplative comes attacking, as it were, alone and without a companion. Why don't I kill him?" So Angulimala, taking up his sword and shield, buckling on his bow and quiver, followed right behind the Blessed One. Then the Blessed One wielded a feat of psychic power such that Angulimala, through running with all his might, could not catch up with the Blessed One, walking at normal pace. Then the thought occurred to Angulimala, "Isn't it amazing? Isn't it astounding? In the past, I've chased and seized even a swift-running elephant, a swift-running horse, a swift-running chariot, a swift-running deer. But now, even though I'm running with all my might, I can't catch up with this contemplative walking at normal pace." So he stopped and called out to the Blessed One, "Stop, contemplative, stop." "I have stopped, Angulimala. It is you who haven't stopped." Then the thought occurred to Angulimala, "These Shakyan contemplative are speakers of the truth, asserters of the truth. And yet this contemplative, even while walking, says, 'I have stopped, Angulimala. It is you who haven't stopped. Why don't I question him?'" So Angulimala, the bandit, addressed the verse to the Blessed One. While walking contemplative, you say, I have stopped. But when I have stopped, you say, I haven't. I ask you the meaning of this. How have you stopped? How haven't I? The Buddha said, I have stopped, Angulimala, once and for all. Having cast off violence towards all living beings, you are still unrestrained towards beings. That's how I've stopped, and you haven't. Angulimala said, at long last, a great revered great seer for my sake has come to the great forest. Having heard your verse in line with the Dhamma, I will also abandon all evil. So saying, the bandit hurried his sword and weapon over a cliff into a pit. Then the bandit paid homage to the feet of the one well gone, and right there requested the going forth. The awakened one, the compassionate great seer, the teacher of the world, along with his deva, said to him then, come, bhikkhu. That in itself was bhikkhuhood for him. Then the blessed one set out wandering towards Savatthi with Venerable Angulimala as his attendant monk. After wandering by stages, he reached Savatthi, and there he lived near Savatthi in Jeta's Grove Anathapindika Monastery. Now at that time, a large crowd of people, loud and noisy, had gathered at the gates to King Pasanadi Kosala's inner palace, calling out, there is a bandit in your reign, sire, named Angulimala, brutal, bloody-handed, devoted to killing and slaying, showing no mercy to living beings. He has turned village into non-village, towns into non-towns, settled countryside into unsettled countryside. Having repeatedly killed human beings, he wears a garland made of fingers. The king must stamp him out. Then King Pasanadi Kosala, with a cavalry of roughly 500 horsemen, drove out of Savatthi and entered the monastery, driving as far as the ground was passable for chariots. He got down from his chariot and went on foot to the Blessed One. On arrival, having bowed down, he sat to one side. As he was sitting there, the Blessed One said to him, what is it, great king? Has King Sanya Bimbisari of Magatha provoked you, or have the Lichavis of Vasali, or some other hostile king? No, Lord, King Sanya Bimbisara of Magatha hasn't provoked me, nor have the Lichavis of Vasali, nor has some other hostile king. There is a bandit in my reign, Lord, named Angulimala, brutal, bloody-handed, devoted to killing and slaying, showing no mercy to living beings. He has turned village into non-village, towns into non-towns, settled countryside into unsettled countryside. Having repeated killed human beings, he wears a garland made of fingers. I am going to stamp him out. Great king, suppose you were to see Angulimala with his hair and beard shaved off, wearing the robe, having gone forth from this home life into homelessness, refraining from killing living beings, refraining from taking what is not given, refraining from telling lies, living the holy life on one meal a day, virtuous and of fine character, what would you do to him? We would bow down to him, Lord, or rise up to greet him, or offer him a seat, or offer him ropes, arms, food, lodging, or medical requisites for curing illness. Or we would arrange a lawful guard, protection, and defense. But how could there be such virtue and restraint in an unvirtuous, evil character? Now, at that time, Venerable Angulimala was sitting not far from the Blessed One. So the Blessed One pointing with his right arm, said to King Pasanadi Kosala, "That great king is Angulimala." Then King Pasanadi Kosala was frightened, terrified, his hair standing on ends. So the Blessed One, sensing the king's fear and hair-raising awe, said to him, "Don't be afraid, great king, don't be afraid. He poses no danger to you." Then the king's fear, his terror, his hair standing on end subside. He ran over to Venerable Angulimala and said, "Are you really Angulimala, Lord?" "Yes, great king. What is your father's clan? What is your mother's clan?" Angulimala replied, "My father is Aganga, great king, and my mother is Mantani." "Then may Master Ganga Mantani Putta delight in staying here. I will be responsible for your robes, arms, food, lodging, and medical requisites for curing illness." Now, it so happens that at that time, Venerable Angulimala was a wilderness dweller, an alms goer, wearing one set of the triple robe made of cast-off cloth. So he said to King Pasanadi Kosala, "Enough, great king, my triple robe is complete." So King Pasanadi Kosala went to the Blessed One and on arrival, having bowed down, sat to one side. As he was sitting there, he said to the Blessed One, "It's amazing, Lord, it's astounding how the Blessed One has tamed the untamed, pacified the unpeaceful, and brought to unbinding those who were not unbound. For what we could not tame even with blunt or bladed weapon, the Blessed One has tamed without blunt or bladed weapons. Now, Lord, we must go. Many are our duties, many our responsibilities. Then do, great king, what you think is now time to do." Then King Pasanadi Kosala got up from his seat, bowed down to the Blessed One, and keeping him to his right, departed. Then Venerable Angulimala, early in the morning, having put on his robes and carrying his outer robe and bow, went into Savati for alms. As he was going from house to house for alms, he saw a woman suffering a breech birth. On seeing her, the thought occurred to him, "How tormented are living beings, how tormented are living beings." Then having wandered for alms in Savati and returning from his alms round after his meal, he went to the Blessed One. On arrival, having bowed down to him, he sat to one side. As he was sitting there, he said to the Blessed One, "Just now, Lord, early in the morning, having put on my robes and carrying my outer robe and bow, I went into Savati for alms. As I was going from house to house for alms, I saw a woman suffering in a breech birth. On seeing her, the thought occurred to me, how tormented are living beings, how tormented are living beings. In that case, Angulimala, go to that woman, and on arrival, say to her, 'Sister, since I was born, I do not recall intentionally killing a living being. Through this truth, may there be well-being for you, well-being for your fetus.' But, Lord, wouldn't that be a lie for me? For I have intentionally killed many living beings." "Then in that case, Angulimala, go to that woman, and on arrival, say to her, 'Sister, since I was born in the noble birth, I do not recall intentionally killing a living being. Through this truth, may there be well-being for you, well-being for your fetus.'" Responding, "As you say, Lord," to the Blessed One, Angulimala went to that woman and on arrival said to her, "Sister, since I was born in the noble birth, I do not recall intentionally killing a living being. Through this, may there be well-being for you, well-being for your fetus." And there was well-being for the woman, well-being for her fetus. Then, Venerable Angulimala, dwelling alone, secluded, heedful, ardent, and resolute, in no long time reach and remain in the supreme goal of the holy life, for which cleansed men rightly go forth from home into homelessness, knowing and realizing it for himself in the here and the now. He said, he knew, birth is ended, the holy life fulfilled, the task done. There is nothing further for the sake of this world, and thus Venerable Angulimala became another one of the Arahants. Then Venerable Angulimala, early in the morning, having put on his robe and carrying his outer robe and bow, went into Savati for alms. Now, at that time, a cloth thrown by one person hit Venerable Angulimala on the body, a stone thrown by another person hit him on the body, and a prostrate thrown by still another person hit him on the body. So Venerable Angulimala, his head broken open and dripping with blood, his bow broken and his outer robe ripped to shreds, went to the Blessed One. The Blessed One saw him coming from afar, and on seeing him said to him, "Bear with it, Brahman, bear with it. The fruit of the karma that would have burned you in hell for many years, many hundreds of years, many thousands of years, you are now experiencing in the here and now." Then Venerable Angulimala, having gone alone into seclusion, experienced the bliss of release. At that time he exclaimed, "Who once was heedless but later is not, brighten the world like the moon set free from the cloud, from a cloud. His evil done deed is replaced with skillfulness. He brightens the world like the moon set free from a cloud. Whatever young monk devotes himself to the Buddha's abiding, he brightens the world like the moon set free from a cloud."
Thank you, Sadhu. So this is the famous Angulimala Sutta. See? Such a very cruel bandit that killed so many human beings in that line. According to the Sutta, it's 999. So the last one to fulfill the 1,000, actually he intend to kill the mother because nobody dare to come to his place except the mother. Then it so happened the Buddha knew, the Buddha appeared. Then he said, "Wow, that is wonderful. I don't have to kill my mother now. Now I can go after the contemplative." So that's how the story comes about. Then this famous exclamation by him after his release of Parinibbana has become the famous Dhammapada verse too. There is a verse on this. So a lot of people have this wrong view or wrong thought. They always say, "My karma like that, how can I meditate? How can I ever have a chance to even become enlightened?" You look at Angulimala, he killed 999. And yet, the moment he changed over, it's like the flip of the hand, I told you. He became different. So he exclaimed, he said, "Who once has heedless? Sorry. Who once was heedless, but later is not. He brightens the world like the moon set free from the cloud. His evil deed is replaced with skillfulness." So you have to do it. You have to, through understanding, immediately do away with your evil action. Replace it with skillfulness. If you do that, he said, he will brighten the world like the moon set free from the cloud. Means you are no longer deluded, clouded. So whatever young monk devotes himself to the Buddha's binding or teaching, he brightens the world like the moon set free from the cloud. That's why as a practitioner, as a cultivator, you can also be a blessing to the world. That's why you brighten the world, like the moon, that is set free from the cloud. So at night when there is no cloud, you can see the moon with its light reflected from the sun. So beautiful. So this is a very good sutta, Angulimala Sutta. But karma is such, he cannot escape. Do you realize after becoming arahant, he still have to go through that karmic thing? Then the Buddha told him, be patient, bear it. He said, this is better than suffering in hell for very long. Take it here and now and finish off with it. That's why he bear it, he take it. Then after that he realized the supreme enlightenment of Nibbana. Then he realized arahantship. So this story will give you faith. Don't worry about the past. Past is already gone, no more reality. You can't change. The moment is the only reality in life and is the highest. So moment to moment, if you decide to change from heedless to heedful, from evil to skillful, you will have the good life. So always remember, don't go and think of the past and create unnecessary suffering, fear, and lack of confidence for yourself. The past is already gone. No more an issue. Because you cannot bring back the past. You cannot change your action. So whatever you have done in the past is already gone. This moment onward. So there is a famous saying by one of the authors, Sir Francis Lai, if I'm not wrong. After he studied the Buddhist teaching, he came out with this saying, which is very good. I found it very good. He said, the past conditioned us into what we are. Like the Buddha said, we are born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of karma. But, he said, it does not dominate over us. You agree or not? Means the past conditioned you into what you are, but it does not dominate over you. What is the meaning? The meaning is, although the past is already set, your life, when you are born into this world, you are already conditioned into it. But he said it does not dominate over you. Why? Because from now on, moment to moment, you can reverse all these things. You only need to have the right understanding, the right guidance, the right teaching, and you are home. And all this can be done, and many people have done it. So sometimes you cannot look down on people or slight people. You look at Hui Ning, the sixth patriarch. He was born illiterate, very poor family. In fact, his father was at one time, I think, quite a ranking government servant. But because the father was very straightforward and all those things, so he was played out and never get promoted. Then he was blamed for things that he never do. So they banished him. So he was banished to a rural area. Then he lost his wealth, everything. Then Hui Ning was born. So he lived in that rural area. Don't have money to go to school too. He was an illiterate or wukata. Then the father passed away. Then after that, he continued to support the mother. So if you look at him, you think, ayo, his karma must be not so good. He may not have the blessing, the merit. where there is no condition for him to have education. So how can he cultivate? You think like that? You will miss the real potential of what Huineng is. And as we can see from the way Huineng became the sixth patriarch and developed all this ability, it's definitely from his past. So when he was born into the world with the form and mind under such condition, he will still come out where he has the Dhamma from the past. And he is gifted. Just like my case, I choose my parent. That's why I was born in a state which is not so developed, Alastha. Then my father, he was a really hardworking dude, do his duty very well. A very sincere parent person who look after the family, very responsible, but very thrifty. So he saved every cent and he sacrificed it on the family. Then actually within my hometown, that area, very few people really managed to make it. You can hardly even find somebody who qualified to become a teacher at that time. Very rare. Because Form 3 or so, very few people pass. Form 5 is a rare gem. Then to go to U also, like seldom happen. Before me, there was another guy, also civil engineer. And later on, I became a civil engineer. I came out, I went and worked in his company. And I met him. So the whole village, only two of us went to MU. The rest, some of them got money, they sent overseas. But local U, only the two of us. So under such conditions and circumstances, yet the nature know what to do and it can come out. That's why don't be pessimistic about your condition. Things can change. When you have the understanding, you change. So this is what Dhamma is all about. As long as you understand, have faith, you can change your life, you can improve your life, you can even be a blessing to all, provided you are determined to change. Okay? you can rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then also you can ask Jin Hao. He said last time he also very sui on everything, don't go right. Then he got a lot of problem, a lot of fear, panic. Then after his patience, then he start to develop the understanding. Then he changed, different. Then that day we were having dinner with that New Zealand Su. He just came back from New Zealand. Then that Sunday class, I think Jin Hao was not around to join us for dinner. So we all one group went there. I think that time Brother Song was there, Padma Sri, Brother Tim was there. And he hasn't seen Jin Hao for quite a while. No? You know, at the dinner, you know what he told me or not? He said, wow, nowadays Jin Hao different. He looked very confident and happy now. No? Last time very kanchong, stressful and all those things. Then I rejoined. I said, wow, sadhu to you, you can see. Yeah, it's a big difference. Why cannot see it? See? People can see that you have changed. And she's the best because she has not seen him for very long. It's like your friend, if you a long time haven't seen him, the moment you see him, you realize, he has slimmed down. Or she fattened already. You can see, right? Wow, now hairstyle different, We have long time didn't see, suddenly see. But you every day see, like Yun Chan's case. He told us one day, he actually did something to his hair, put something on the hair there. He asked the husband, did you observe anything different? The husband looked at him, you are still the same Yun Chan. Then she came and shared with us and laughed over it. That was really fun. We every day see or take for granted. So they say, absence makes the mind what? The heart fonder. No, that one is the negative one. Absence makes the heart fonder. He means he long for you. Understand? We'll miss you so long. Then some people out of sight, out of mind, because they got too much choice. So what do you hold on to as your philosophy? Out of sight, out of mind. Depend on who. Yeah, sometimes it's your choice. Human being has a lot of choice. But I realize living beings don't know how to choose. Most of the time they choose wrongly. It's because they lack wisdom. Then if you were to hear Krishnamurti, you will get a shock of your life. Do you know what he advised or not? In his teaching, he said, the words he used are, whenever there is choice, there is confusion. You agree or not? can understand. Agree. Sadhu to you. Whenever there is choice, there is confusion. And this sentence was so profound. The moment I heard it, I said, this one very few people can understand. Because human being will tell you, hey, you have to make choice lah in life. How can you don't make choice? You have to choose who you want to marry to, isn't it? You have to choose which career you want to take, isn't it? Correct or not? So there is a lot of choice that you have to make in life. Then sometimes you are faced with a dilemma. You need to choose. Correct or not? But those wise ones, they will tell you, why must you choose? The moment you choose, there is confusion. Means you don't understand. You don't understand who you are, what you are, and what you are destined for. Do you know I never choose my career? When I was young, standard one, I was the last in the class. All the subject, 10 subjects, is zero. Because my father, out of compassion and good nature, talked to a neighbor. He said, colonial time that time, all the English letter come, nobody know how to read. So he said, why not, because my age and that neighbor's son age is the same, why not we do something different? We send our second child to the best English school in Alostar. You are in a village that spoke only dialect. Nobody speak English. Nobody know English. You go to an English school, the best school. So I was very grateful that my father sent me to that school. I go there, I can't understand a single word. The teacher teach. That's why standard one I got all zero. Then standard two, because that time I know how to play card already. You know, in a small town, funeral also people play card, play all the whatever gambling one. Then I also been conditioned and become very good in card game. So all the three card, I look at two card, I no need to add one. I know the number already. Then I know what the card I want on. If I got a 8 and a 9, I want a 3, 20 point. Chap tiam. So I know. So a 7 and a 6, you need another 7. So straight away I know. So arithmetic is the only subject. I score 100. The rest 9 subject 0. And I was second last in the class. my teacher got a problem. How to give me the book prize? Well, I was the best student in the whole form now for arithmetic. And the class also, nobody got 100 mark. Then he got a dilemma, he go and call the headmaster. The headmaster came, he said, anything. Yeah, I was sitting in front row. I was very short, very small size, so in the front row. So I heard the teacher talk to the headmaster. He said, I got a problem. I got this student, he pointed to me. Arithmetic, he got 100, you know, but all the other subjects is 0. You know. So how to give him the book prize? The headmaster, very wise, you know. He said, anybody else in the class got 100? The teacher, check, don't have. Then he didn't copy, give to him. And I got the book prize. And it was during that time, standard 2, we got this curriculum card that follow us. So we had to put our occupation. I got no thought at all. I didn't make any choice. I straight away put there civil engineer. I also don't know why I put civil engineer. It's destined. This is what I want. Then my classmate next to me share the same two table share. He saw me put civil engineer. He snatched my testimony, the curriculum card. He went out to the class in front and he announced the whole class. He said, Ken Kun want to become a civil engineer. He said, whole world civil engineer. I was the last in that class. He started one. So because of that, I didn't even get angry. I didn't even get unhappy. I just look at him. Then inside my heart, I said, okay, you laugh. End of the day, see who laugh. But I was so convinced that I will become what I want to be. But I have faith in what I do. And I very simple. I dress whatever dress my mother do for me. Buy the cheap clothes. Well, we got 10 brothers and sisters. Then my mother sold the clothing herself. The sleeve also long and short. Then a lot of button, not balance. So some of my classmates who are from wealthy family, they laugh at me. I say, you laugh. I'm happy because my mother did for me. You also want your mother buy. So this is how you perceive it, with wholesomeness, with confidence, with understanding. Then you don't suffer. You won't be subject to people teasing you, ridicule you. Then you get angry like your student. After that, scared, withdraw, introvert, then become depressed, become a problem. Good karma, different. No such thing. I even can understand what is happening. I was so confident about what. When I was young, I knew I am different from other people. A lot of things happened in my life, and I knew that I was different. When I was very young, I was already very different. So because of that, I have to explain this about choice. Now, I tell you, every kid is different. Their talent is different. So you don't really have to make the choice. As a parent, you have your experience. You can guide people. Your children, you can advise them. Yeah, sadhu. So, advising, guiding, and all these things can actually make you a good parent. If you do your duty well, in future, your parent will guide you. Yeah. Then it's not a matter of choice. So what I told my children is, this career follow you for your entire life. Means a major part of your life. So you need to understand what you want. You don't have to follow me, even though your dad is a civil engineer. You don't have to become an engineer. Well, some children, unknowingly, they are under the influence, understand? And also the conditioning, then they will tend to study the same thing as their parent, because they feel that that is a good career. So I told them, after Form 5, you will be going to college and university, then you will need to decide what you want to be when you grow up. Then I say, whatever course you want to find out, I got classmates, I have contact, I can take you to see them. So I took my daughter, my son, to see some of my classmates. So one of them was an accountant, I think. Then after that, I said, engineering, you see me. Huh? Then there are other profession and career. Then finally, she made the decision. He said he want to study IT. I also don't know what IT is at that time. Information technology. Huh? My son also same. He went around. Then he said he want to study IT. Then I said, which college? So I took them around. And my daughter want to be near my house, KDU. Huh? Then my son, I took him to KDU, he don't like. So I took him to UPIT. Oh, he liked UPIT. So finally he said, okay, UPIT. So we registered them. And he also took IT. And they did very well. Then you come to know, that is what they want to know. But they are born under this condition, and they want to come this during this era, the IT era. And they will do well under this era. Like my son, I realize, he everything he depend on the internet and all those. He seldom go and buy textbook and read book one. Seldom, apart from textbook or the school and uni. The rest, he got it from the internet one. Then he learned himself on through all this very fast one. So my daughter also have the passion for IT. That's why they came out, they did very well. So when it comes to choice, it's because you don't know what your path is. You don't know what your purpose in this life. You don't know who you are, what you are. You don't know why you come. That's why you need to make choice. For me, I don't need to make choice. I see the condition. Condition like that, I will decide like that. I didn't make choice. Sometimes even I make that decision, then when condition change, I will still change. Because I trust my karma. I trust my nature. I trust my spiritual nature. That's why I go to spiritual trip, they know. There can be planning how we want to have the trip. But when I'm there, I will know. Certain thing, the sign come there, I say, we don't go to this one. We will go, we change. So I make impromptu changes. And everything will fall into place and follow accord and flow. Your condition like that, things will be like that. And you have a good nature, you trust your nature, you know things are going to be like that. That's why you have that wisdom and the understanding. You no need to make choice. The decision comes from the condition, from your understanding. You make that decision. That's it, finish. A lot of people don't know what to do. The only time I tried to be fair to my father was when I was in Form 6. I knew I am very good in my study. I knew I want to become a civil engineer. That's why I have to decide in Lower 6 whether I take maths or I take bio. My father wanted me to be a doctor. You know, he's a Chinese sensei. And to be a doctor at that time is so prestigious. Of course, engineer also prestigious. But he is in that profession, so he wanted me also to study medicine. Then I knew I can also study medicine. You know why? In Form 5, I got 5 book prizes. All the math and science, I topped the school. Bio, physics, chemistry, pure maths, additional maths. So, because of that, and geography, that's fine. That time, no pure maths. Pure maths was Form 6. So Form 5, I topped. So, I tell myself I have to be fair to my father, because I don't want to disappoint my father. You know what I did or not? I decided to draw a lot. I let nature decide. I write 4 maths, 4 bio. I throw them all into a container. Then I shake. Then I draw out 4 times. You know what happened? All the 4 also maths. Then I tell myself, meant to be. I tell my father, very sorry. I would very much wish to fulfill what you want me to be, but I can't. That thing show it to me like that. You know what is the probability or not? Every time you draw, all the four come out, mats. You know? There's only four mats inside there, you know? And eight of that pieces. You know? And everyone I draw, mats. You know? So a lot of things that happen in life and nature is not what you think. The conditioning already there. Because my past nature, the vow, everything, I choose to come during transition period, everything. And that is my nature. That's what I knew. That is what my nature is. That is what I am. That is what my understanding, karmic nature, spirit. That's why I don't make choice. I do make decision based on understanding. But I never choose. I never have a situation where I have to choose what to do. I never. So, when I heard this statement from Krishnamurti, wherever there is choice, there is confusion. I say, this guy must be a brilliant guy, very wise. Then now I hear from Kep Hun, he also agree. Explain. Kep Hun? Wait, the mic. You also don't need to make choice, huh? Very good.
Because there are so much choices that the young ones are so confused. So we actually do career counseling.
No wonder he knows wherever there is choice, there is confusion. The young people got a lot of choice and they are very confused.
When they are very good, especially when their A-levels are all straight A's.
Straight A's.
So they themselves don't want to do medicine, but the parents think that, medicine is the highest of the peak.
Why are you taking
something like biomedical science? Why are you taking something? So there's a lot of conflict between parent and child.
Correct.
So what we do is we don't say who is right. We give all the data, the and then we say, well, you are making an informed decision. It's not right or wrong.
Good, informed decision.
And then you make a choice at this period of time and you have to sustain and carry it through because it's a lot of money and it's a lot of sacrifice by people involved.
And also, once you graduate, that career, you like it or you don't like it, it's going to stay with you, you know. Do you understand? It's like your whole of your working life, you know. So if you choose the wrong one, I tell you, you can be miserable, you know.
But sadly, there are also a lot of students now who finish their MBBS and do not practice medicine.
Yeah, because they don't like their career. Because that is what their parents like. I told you that the lady that joined my class, the son took the degree, engineering degree, throw it to her and said, this is for you. This is what you want. I already fulfilled. Then he told the mother, no, from now onward, don't interfere with my life. He walked over the house, just like that. So you have such a lesson in life. What will you do? Do you cry and become miserable? Or you learn from it? That lady cried and become very miserable, upset. That's why he went to temple and seek religion. Then when he attended my class, I was explaining to somebody else, as parent, what must you do? You must not force them, otherwise you get into trouble. Because if they don't like that thing, then they will rebel. Then some commit suicide. You're under tremendous pressure, especially younger one, form one, form two. You don't know, no. You indirectly give them the pressure. No? You have this expectation that they will do well. No? That every time they top the class, no? Especially primary school, I got one classmate like that. Standard 1 to standard 6, they top the class. No? Every time, first in the class. No? Then when he went to form 1, I think that time is no more like primary school, you know, where your parents can teach you. But when you go to Form 1, a lot of things you need to like not memorize anymore. You need to express it out, you know, like geography and all those things. You need to express it out, you know. Then certain things you need to write to express, like essay and all those things. So during that time, he couldn't become like in primary school every time top the school, you know, or the class. So form one, I think he got number 13, no, in the class. No. And he cried, you know. He scared the parent will scold him and all those things. And really, when he went home, he couldn't fire him from the parent. How come you top student, every time number one in the class, first in the class? Why did this happen? Then some under tremendous pressure and stress, they not go home. Then they do something stupid. They commit suicide. It happened. The newspaper you read before. Okay, good. Get home. Thank you for your good sharing. Sadhu. So, when you come to choice, make sure you understand what you want. Then you don't have to make a choice. Your decision is straightforward based on your understanding. Means you understand what you want, what you decide to be. So that is not making choice. Choice means you're not sure, you're very confused. This one, correct? Or this one, correct? So when you need to choose, means you don't have the understanding. You are trying your luck. Yes or no? So for my case, I never make that choice except out of love for my father. So that one, I didn't make choice. Why? Because I let nature decide. Understand now? I draw the Lord and put it inside. Nature decide. So nature give me the answer. And that's what my life is meant to be. That's why I don't need to make choice. It just happened. Okay, we go on. Tami, yeah, thank you. Read on, part 3.
Part 3, meditation. 3.1, question 1. While sitting in half lotus for some time, the pain of the leg become unbearable. And then, when I start to chant, the original pain ceases, but a more severe pain arises in another part of the legs. Why? Brother Chio replied, first, you must understand what meditation is and what are you doing in the name of meditation, your purpose and intent. If you don't have such an understanding, then there is this tendency to react to unpleasant feeling, sensation that arises during the meditation by labeling it as pain, which is an aversion or an ill will. And as we all know, ill will is one of the 5 mental hindrances of the mind that will hinder your mind from entering into meditative state of peace and calm. As such, you are already caught or trapped by it. Because of your dislike towards such unpleasant sensation, your mind will try to do something else, like chanting, to either suppress it or make it go away. As chanting is just another skillful means to train the mind, and it is still within the field of thoughts. Hence, by doing so, you have lost your focus because meditation consists of 2 steps. Number 1. The first step is to develop the training of the mind to be constantly aware, leading to the heedfulness. Then the second step is to use the trained mind to meditate or cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. Understanding this will enable you to just silence your mind and patiently relax your body and mind to allow the sensation to be without any like or dislike for it, because it is the nature of this body to develop that sensation. If you do not know how to relax to enable the qi to flow through the blockage, so just be aware or mindful always to observe what is going on within your form and mind, and to investigate via mindfulness to understand how the movement of mind from one state to another comes to be. That is to understand how the stirring of the mind comes to be and how the mind can be conditioned. into negativity, emotions, selfishness, and fear, etc. Via delusion upon seeing something or hearing something or thinking something, etc.
Yeah, very good. So now, from the explanation, you understand. When you meditate, most people will have to confront pain. But almost most meditators, they don't understand what pain is. When you meditate, when you are not relaxed, what happens is you cross your leg. So at the bend, the qi finds difficulty to flow. So when the qi cannot flow, it will lead to pain, sometimes numbness and all those things. So because of that, you feel that sensation coming. But most of us want comfortable feeling, true or not? You want to be comfortable during meditation. So when you experience such feeling, you label it as unpleasant, pain. You don't like it. That's why there is dislike, aversion. And this is a mental hindrance, one of the five mental hindrance, the first two, sensual desire and ill will. So if it's a mental hindrance, means you are creating mental hindrance in your meditation. Do you understand? That's why don't do that. Why can't you accept the reality of the form? When you don't know how to relax, the qi will not flow. Then there is constriction. Then this one will build up. Then you have this sensation coming. Then why must you reject the sensation? You just relax into it, silent, and allow the qi to flow. Then when there is no mental hindrance, there is nothing to hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. So when you are relaxed and silent, sati take over. Your five mental spiritual faculty take over. That's why you become quiet, peaceful. Then you experience spiritual calmness, spiritual joy. Then that joy and that calmness can actually overcome the pain. That sensation will slowly dissipate, where you have better sensation to attend to. And when you can do that with understanding, you know how to relax, actually the pain is gone. That's why in the early day, after I went through all this and experienced all this myself, when I understand, I got no problem sitting. In the early day, when I was younger, not that very young, only the last 2 or 3 years, I start to use this chair because I don't want to burden this old physical body. I can sit actually, but no point. Why you want to be a hero? Last time when I started teaching, that time you asked Yun Chan, I say, 2-3 hours I just sat there like that. I didn't move at all. Then there are some new people when I went to teach in Bab and all things. They were talking at the back. Wow, this brother Teo, he had been sitting there almost 3 hours, no movement. Whereas they all listening, less than half an hour, 45 minutes, move here, move there, and the legs stretching there. So, because I know how to relax, and I can still do it, but no point. Because that year, when I forgot to bring my cushion, this cushion, well, this one is softer, I am used to this cushion. So when I didn't bring cushion, that was when, 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, plus this year is 3 years ago. So what happened was, I got no cushion in there. So they go and look for one, very big one, square one, but very hard, really hard one. Then that time I said, wow, you relax also no use, because that thing is so hard, I'm not used to it. So there is no more balance like last time. Or then I start to feel that it's hurting this leg, no point. So after that I say, I need to sit on the chair. I think the first time we don't have this chair. It was another chair. So I sat on the chair. Then I finished off the retreat. And then after that, Pamasuri, very good. They use Kayamita fund to buy this chair. I have this style of chair in my house. So that's why I say, this chair is good. This chair, I can meditate on it. I can relax, I can share, and I can do a lot of things. So, when you know how to meditate, you will know how to relax. Then no problem with the meditation. So this is how you actually can develop the understanding. Okay? Tell me, read on.
The Buddha teaches five ways to overcome negative unwholesome thoughts that have arisen. Number one, think of the direct opposite wholesome thought. For example, if there is an anger, then develop metta. And if there is cruelty, then develop compassion. And if there is fear, develop faith. Number two, think of the consequence of holding on to the unwholesome thought or evil roots. If you do not abandon it, then the evil roots, which are the roots of all evil, will condition you to become an evil person. For example, anger will condition one into hatred and violence. An angry person can kill, harm, and abuse others. Number three, relax and aware via just let things be. This is the meditative way, via understanding that the natural state of mind before its stirring is already in the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and silent inner awareness. And the flowering of thought is the very ending of that thought. Number four, trace the origination factor of the unwholesome thought and then retrospectively reverse it via the cultivation of mindfulness of Dhamma, Dhamma Nupassana, that is, via cultivating the mindfulness of the six internal and six external sense bases. This is to develop the wisdom to free. Number five, if all the above four ways also cannot help you, then you must use your own self-determination as recommended by the Buddha, which is with clenched teeth and with your tongue towards your palate, you should determine strongly to abandon the negative thought.
Very good. Thank you so much. Give me a minute. I have to do this cover up. Okay, very good. So the five ways to overcome wrong thought and wholesome thought is very powerful, very important. The first two is still thought-based. That's why it involves right effort. Right effort to abandon the wrong thought that has arisen. So that right effort is a thought, because the wrong thought that has arisen is a thought. So the effort is thought-based. Then think of the consequent, second way, also thought-based. Where you still involve thinking, understand? Think of the consequent of holding on to that thought. But the third and fourth is the meditative way. Through understanding, you will know how to meditate. Because your original state of mind, before the thinking, before the stirring, the input of content of consciousness, it is the meditative mind, it's the silent mind, in stillness, in tranquility, it's just aware, there is nothing. So why can't I just relax and allow that whatever mind state that has arisen, means the unwholesome thought, let's say anger, angry thought, or fear, or worry, anxiety, restlessness, all these are with the evil root, the wrong thought. So when I silence my mind and just maintain awareness, be with it, mean be with the fear, then like Krishnamurti said, the very flowering of that thought is the very ending of that thought. You know what is flowering or not? When the flower until it cannot flower, what happened? After the flower cannot flower, what happened? You will wither, It will drop off and disappear. So the energy field that condition your anger, your hatred, your emotion, your fear, or your selfishness is an energy field. So when you are mindful, relaxed, and just aware, this energy will dissipate. That's why the very flowering of thought, you let that angry thought, that unwholesome thought flower until it ceases. Then, your original state of mind return. You remember the analogy that the Buddha gave. He asked Ananda to go and collect water for him to drink. So first time Ananda went, the pool of water, too muddy, cannot drink, because the blocka keep on going across. Then later on, the Buddha asked him to go again, second time, again same, still got blocka, not clean. Then he came back and report to the Buddha. The Buddha said, okay, you wait till at night, then you go again. So for the third time, Ananda went. And he was so surprised though, at night, because after a certain time, no more blocka passes by. It was clear water. So he took the thing, happily returned to the Buddha and passed the water to the Buddha. And you know what the Buddha asked him? What do you learn from this particular task that I asked you to do? Ananda couldn't understand. He said, your mind is like that pool of water. You understand? When there is nothing to stir it, no blocka cross by, there is clarity. Understand? It's already the clean, pure water. We have the sediment all settled. When you allow it to settle, it will settle. Understand? They are not intrinsic to the true mind. They are external to the mind. They are dependent originating condition arising. And all this come about because you keep on stirring your mind, disturbing the mind. Through what? Through your delusion, through your ignorance, through your fear, worry, anxiety. That's why you get excited. Then sometimes there is anxiety, fear, worry, sorrow, lamentation. Then you react through wrong view. You get angry, emotional. Then sometimes there is phobia and all those things. So all these are unwholesome thoughts. And they arise because of your lack of wisdom, lack of Dhamma. And you don't know that these are evil, wrong thoughts that condition your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation, and your suffering, misery. The moment you understand, he told Ananda, it's just like the bulakka. After a period, no more stirring, no more disturbing, then your mind settles down on its own. That is the clear water. That is the clear mind. Your meditative mind. So meditation, the third way is just like that. Don't do anything. Relax, silent, aware. Everything will return to its original state. Then like Krishnamurti said, the very flowering of thought is the very ending of that thought. But when you want to develop this type of understanding, you have to go further, the Buddha said. If the third way, which is already very good, but the problem is you can't really live life. You know why? Every time you face a situation outside, you get angry or you have fear, what you do? You run to one corner and meditate. You understand? Huh? Then that fear gone. That anger gone. But then you got to come out and live life again. Then again you get angry. Again you run to somewhere and make your mind peaceful again. This is not a permanent solution. Understand? If the Buddha is like that, he is not the Buddha. Understand? That's why he teaches you the fourth way. He said you have to develop the real wisdom. The first one is the initial wisdom. How to overcome it. How to abandon it. But when you see it in your meditation with mindfulness, then you will come to know how the unarisen mental hindrance comes to be. Because before you are angry, there was no anger. Right? Anger comes after. So he said, when you silence your mind, then the anger ceases, then you will come to know how the arisen mental hindrance ceases to be. That is in the Dhamma Nupassana. First category of cultivation, mindfulness of the five mental hindrances. So when you understand that, then you can link to the fourth way that the Buddha teach. He said, trace the origination factor. How did the wrong thought arise? How did anger arise? How did fear arise? So if you are mindful, you realize it's always from your sixth sense door. Either when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, or think of something, or tactile feel something, like the pain and all that, then it conditions the wrong thought. Oh, then you trace the origination, right? Oh, after I see, I have wrong view, I stir my mind, I get angry. Through memory and through conditioning, through wrong view. So the Buddha said, after you have traced the origination factor, you should retrospectively using this understanding to reverse it. How to reverse it? I must straighten my view, isn't it? True or not? Huh? Huh? How to straighten your view? Means you have to learn to see things as they are, like what the Buddha said. Ah, then you realize, hey, the Buddha says seeing things as they are. What does he mean? Brother Tio will give you the answer. Means people is just the way they are. The world is the world. It cannot be otherwise. Deluded people do deluded things. Selfish people do selfish things. Angry people do angry things. Then you can accept them for what they are. And then you realize, hey, I don't have to get angry. I don't have to stir my mind. I can be at peace. I don't need to argue with people. They are just the way they are. No right, no wrong, no duality. Understand? This is how you apply. Then when you apply, after you straighten your view, you have the initial wisdom. So the next time you see or hear or think or any other sense conscious arise, you no longer like ordinary people, heedless people. You no longer react, stir and get yourself entangled. That's how you become more and more calm, more and more peaceful. Then you are more and more aware, where your mind doesn't stir like before. So the straightening of view will lead you to have the understanding to reduce your avijja, ignorance. So when ignorance is being reduced, sankhara also slow down, reduce. That's how you progress. That's how your mind, mental activity, your thinking, your stirring of mind, your emotion, all slowly, slowly become less and less and less. Then you are most of the time just aware, calm, peaceful. That is what Dhamma is all about. That's what meditation is all about. So the third and fourth way is the most powerful. So this one, mark it on the book and go through it. Okay, now chapter 7.
Chapter 7. Part 1. Recapitulation and emphasis on the previous lesson. 1.1. Brother Chia re-emphasized the importance of understanding the following. Number 1. What is meditation? So that we understand what we are doing in the name of meditation, and this will keep us always in focus. Number 2. There are 2 steps involved in the development of meditation as taught by the Buddha. A. First step is to refrain the mind to be heedful via using a skillful means or an object of meditation to anchor the mind in awareness or mindfulness, so that the mind is relaxed, aware, silent, and mindful within. Second step is to make use of this trained mind in silent awareness, to see things as they are, to develop the meditation as taught by the Buddha, namely the cultivation of the daily mindfulness or Sati Sampajana, the 4 foundations of mindfulness, the 3 turnings of the 4 Noble Truths, and the Noble Eightfold Path. 3. The aim of meditation is to realize the state of enlightenment that is beyond thought and beyond time, physical time. Because the Dhamma is timeless or akaliko in Pali. 4. Thought-based meditation is limited to the field of thoughts. Hence, it cannot free our mind or lead it to realize a state that is beyond thought and beyond time. Because the moment of thoughts, the moments of thoughts is physical time.
Psychological time.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
the moment of thought is psychological time.
I may have to explain this. Huh? You know what is psychological time or not? We have physical time, isn't it? Physical time is measured by the rotation of our planet around the sun. One full rotation is 24 hours. So that physical time is a measurement. You can follow. Whereas thought, psychological thinking, mental time, when you arise a thought, psychological time start. You understand? When there is no thought, there is no psychological time. Do you understand? Yeah. This is the meaning. Beyond thought, beyond time. Because thought is psychological time. So a lot of people don't understand. How can it go beyond time? Time keep on passing by. That is physical time. Understand or not? What we are talking about is you got no more thought. That's why there is no psychological time. Where you have realized the unconditioned, which is the enlightenment state, Nibbana. So when you have realized that, it is beyond thought, beyond time. That's why thought-based meditation can never realize that. Because you are using thought to meditate. You are using thought to interpret. To try to realize a state that is beyond thought. How can? You can't. You really can't. There is no way. You understand? The instrument you use, like microscope, the magnification only 10 times. How can you see things that is 100 times smaller? You understand? So the instrument that you start is the wrong instrument. That's why you have to use awareness. The Buddha said, you go beyond the thought, you develop mindfulness, awareness, no more thought. Okay? Continue.
I have a question.
Yes.
Psychological time, is it similar to the situation when we feel we are nervous and we are in fear, like waiting for something urgent? Even 1 minute feels like forever.
Oh, okay.
Is it that kind?
I have to explain it deeper, further. Thank you for the good question. You see, psychological time is when you arise thought, when you start to think, okay? But what my daughter is trying to ask is very much deeper than that. Because time is relative. You know what is relativity or not? Theory of relativity. Einstein is the scientist that came out with the theory of relativity. To him, time is a fourth dimension. You know why time is a fourth dimension? Because it's another dimension where there is a measurement. So you cannot say all time are the same. Because the time can be defined by a formula. Your speed, that is physical time. There is a formula, you check up the... You got this formula, 1 into your speed over the speed of light, the whole thing square. So, time equals to this one. So C equals the speed of light. S is your speed. The speed you are traveling in. So if you travel at the speed of light or near the speed of light, what happens? This S tends towards the speed of light. So when this one tends towards the speed of light, C over C is what? 1, isn't it? 1 minus 1 is what? 0. Yeah. Square root of 0 is what? 0. Yeah. That's why time stop. That's why the scientists know you can fly at the speed of light, you never age. You go outer space, after maybe a few hundred years or thousand years, you come back, you never age. It's still the same, because they have proved it, theory of relativity. But what we are talking about is psychological time. So, but this one is physical time. This one is physical time. Physical time. So psychological time involves the mind. So when you are suffering, when you are in a state of fear, anxiety, when it attacks you, when you have panic attack and all those things, or when you have problem, because you cling on to it almost every moment, every second. You understand not? That's why it appears like very, very long, that you have been suffering for very long. Like she said, the anxious moment while waiting for the maybe decision or the result. Like you have a biopsy test to confirm whether it's positive or not. I tell you, that type of waiting can be really tormenting, hell to you, most people. So that is relative, because you have fear, you cling, you grasp, then that psychological time becomes more intense, understand not? But if you just daydreaming, happy-go-lucky in the house, living your normal life with a lot of thought, you are still involving in psychological time. But it doesn't seem like very long, very normal to you. So psychological time is, if you are a cultivator, if you are a meditator, you seldom have thought, you seldom think. So you don't have much psychological time. Because thought is egoic. Thought has the universal characteristics of suffering. Because it's egoic, it has the evil root, the personality, the condition, the selfishness, the greed, the hatred, and the delusion. So wherever there is thought, there is thinking. Then there is suffering, where there is attachment, there is craving, there is desire. Positive, negative, thought, work, condition, suffering. That's why ultimately the universal characteristic of suffering is there. Because it's impermanent, it's going to change. And when it changes, you cannot understand, the thought reacts. Understand? Well, the thought wanting your way. Then the thought refuses to die. If the thought don't die, you continue to create thought. Thought is concept, idea, words. And this creates more division, more problem, more argument, more conflict. So this psychological time is a source of suffering. That's why when you progress in meditation, you have less and less thought, you have less and less psychological time, you will experience the pure mind, the true mind. And that mind is very different. Most of the time, it's just aware. But because you still have the five aggregate of form and mind, you need to live life. Sometimes you need to use thought. You use it, no problem. You need to arise, you arise. You need to communicate, you communicate. You need to express yourself, like I share with you. From the nature, it come out. But this form and mind with the understanding and the wisdom and the transformation, it cannot hold. That's why you got no suffering. You got no creation or thinking. Because what is being shared is the understanding from the nature that manifests through this form and mind. You understand? I am not creating thought. That's why inside is always silent. I may be actively sharing, but inside is stillness. From that stillness, all this understanding come about. The wisdom is connected to it. That's why it can manifest through this form and mind. But my nature is still, no movement at all. Yeah. Can understand, huh? Not easy, huh? Okay. Does that answer? Yeah. Very good. Okay. Continue, huh?
Number five. Diligently cultivate the five spiritual faculties of Saddha, Viriya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya to overcome the five hindrances of mind, of sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, or sleepy or lethargic mind, restlessness of mind, and doubt. Number six.
The danger of having self-delusion and not comprehending what sakkayaditti or self-delusion is. Number 7. Importance of using mindfulness to observe and understand how your mind stirs or gets conditioned into mental thinking or activity, leading to all the emotions and reactions to sense experience that condition one's suffering, etc. We are comprehending the famous Mahayana saying of qi xing dong nian. The arising of mind creates thinking, hence stirring the mind comes to be. Or in Theravada term, it is avijja paccaya sankhara, ignorance conditioned activity of mind. The first two links of the paticca samuppada, dependent origination. Number 8. Originally, before the stirring, the mind is already in the meditative state of peace, silence, and still awareness within. So the stirring of the mind only comes about when we do not have the wisdom and understanding of this fundamental principle of the original or true mind. Then, through our own delusion or ignorance, we cause our mundane mind to arise, hence the stirring, via our reaction to sense experiences at every moment of sense door consciousness. Train the mind to have the silent inner awareness and clarity to see all this clearly. Then there is no more delusion, thereby understanding that if we can just let things be, then there is no more suffering or problem. And with this understanding, tranquility will return by not trying to do anything, while using the thought to suppress or control, etc. That is, just be patient to maintain the silent mind with clear inner awareness and let everything return to its original state before its stirring. Always remember, when there is no delusion or ignorance, then there is no stirring of the mind. Hence, having the understanding that only wisdom frees the mind, that is the moment you have wisdom, your mind will not stir and you are free, so no need to do anything after that, because things are just the way they are, suchness or ta-ta-ta.
Very good. Sadhu. This particular chapter, all the important pointers regarding meditation are here listed clearly, very concisely and beautifully. So if you really want to understand meditation and develop fast progress, you better mark this page, page 29. All the pointers from 1 to 8, they are very useful. Then read the note, then we stop.
Note, tata means thus in Sanskrit and Pali, and Buddhist think this refers to what is called reality as it is, yata bhuta. This reality is also referred to as thusness or suchness, and tata in Pali, including what is.
Indicating
what is, or the isness of things. A Buddha or an Arahant is defined as someone who knows and sees reality as it is. Yata Buddha Jnana Dasana. Gata, gone, is the past, passive particle of the verbal root gam, go, travel. Agata, come, is the past passive particle of the verb meaning come, arrive. Thus, in this interpretation, Tathagata means literally either the one who has gone to suchness or the one who has arrived at suchness.
Yeah, this one is very beautiful. Okay, we stop here. So let us rejoice and thank you. Tell me. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. This particular chapter is all on meditation. It's very good. So, chapter 6 and 7, they are very useful. Okay, you can have your lunch. Then we come back at 1:30. Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Brothers and sisters,